Hi, this is Steve Gilmore. For those of you who've been watching live, you saw it. For the rest of you, this is the beginning of the Gilmore Gang. Hi, I'm Steve Gilmore.
We interrupt this previously scheduled program right. with our own program.
Joining us from somewhere slightly south of actually being clueful is me, Steve Gilmore. I just didn't turn the record on, so I apologize for that. Our guests are John Toshek, who you just heard, John Borthwick from New York.
Hey, Steve.
Robert Scoble from San Francisco.
At the Biadio offices in San Francisco.
And Kevin Marks from his lead-lined yard in San Jose. Okay? All right. So we had somehow circuitously gotten to the news of the day, Gaddafi. And, John, you just mentioned that Chartbeat basically gave you the information about the Gaddafi story first, and that it was interesting because it was an event-based notification. You saw 50,000 viewers going over to Al Jazeera, basically. Is that a good summary of where we are?
That is a fair summary, yeah.
Okay. And I interrupted somebody when at that point. Does anybody remember who that was?
I think it was John Toshek who was asking about whether you could do sort of regional roll-ups of that data, because the alert data from Chartbeat right now is, you know, specific to the website. So I get it because I'm still president of Chartbeat, but I'm part of the company. But that's why I get to see all these alerts. But normally, you know, I would love to make this data public, but it is the property of the publishers. So certain publishers like Henry Blodgett have made it public, but most of them do not today. But that kind of alert-based, you know, where you basically, what happened here is 50,000 people show up on the website and Chartbeat triggers an alert because it's got a ping, a heartbeat every 5 seconds or so on the website. It suddenly says, wow, all these people showed up, something's going on. And in this case, I went over to the website and, you know, they had a report from Libyan TV saying Gaddafi had been captured or killed.
But, yeah, I think my question is, you know, can't you abstract just where the pings are coming from, which region, so people can kind of tune into a region and then figure that out?
That's possible. And I think that, you know, it's that could be we should try that. We should try that.
So the larger story that I'm feeling, we had sort of been feeling around the idea that what was going on in the last 24 hours is a way to sort of slipstream into the news of the week. But I'll just cut to the chase. As far as I'm concerned, other than the stories about Steve Jobs' biography, the Siri, I think, has just captivated people in a fundamental way. And I'm not really talking about the technology as such, but rather the impact that having this kind of automated content creation and the implications for what happens when you start to have various nodes trigger those kinds of notifications without actually, you know, as I think Dennis Crowley was on, was interviewed at Web 2.0 Summit by Eric Schoenfeld, and I didn't see the video, but the text indicated that that Dennis sees this kind of, you know, check-in notification.
Steve?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm still there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. John, can you hear me?
I can now. You froze up for a second.
Oh.
You said Dennis said?
Yeah. Dennis Crowley basically indicated that they were moving toward an era of not even having a check-in, but rather automated, you know, GPS, basically, you know, tracking kinds of notifications that, if you think about it, and that's what I've been thinking about with Siri, these notifications can start to basically decorate your activities throughout the day, and they can start talking to each other, which I think is related to this story that we were just talking about as far as Chartbeat, and, you know, that the events are actually now becoming the first order of magnitude information, and that the commentary or the reporting, you know, etc., is becoming a secondary effect. Does anybody want to respond to that?
I think anytime you put a piece of interesting technology on 100 million devices, you know, whatever it is, it's going to have some kind of impact, whether it works or not. And now you're seeing that, you know, you're going through this kind of almost like a hype cycle of Siri, where there was this infatuation. Now there's, you know, like, well, people are just testing it, and it's frivolous, you know, in some cases, in some of the reports I've seen. And then now there's going to be like a platform for development, I guess. I think you're right. I think we're still in this point of frivolousness. But it is, it has got the attention of a lot of people, including the Google guys.
So can I?
Yeah, please.
So I don't think, I mean, I think that I agree with you, Tashek, that the interactions today, many of them are frivolous. But I think that, you know, what's happening with Siri and what's happening here is a big fundamental shift, right? So this past week, I heard the news gang from last week, and you guys talked a lot about Steve Jobs passing. And I think that, and there was some discussion about sort of what comes next, and do we know what comes out of Apple next, et cetera, et cetera. In my mind is that Jobs' life, you know, his professional life, so much of it was about humanizing the interface between computers and between human beings. And I think that Siri is a fundamental step forward. Granted, it's been done before, right? Siri, before the acquisition, and many other companies out there have done voice interfaces. But what you have now is you have a device that is very personal. We walk around with it, we carry it in our pocket, and the technology is at a point, and this is typical of Apple, and I think it's much of the genius of Steve Jobs, is finding that it's that point where the technology is just good enough to be able to fundamentally shift the human interface between the person, between the hardware, and between the network, right? So the fact that Siri is checking into the network on every request, the fact that this is, you're taking your voice and you are now participating, just like on an iPad, your gestures are participating. We're participating in the network using our voice. It to me, it's part of the progression of, you know, much of what we're building, we're all building today, which is, you know, we're gradually connecting more and more of our activity, whether it be physical or whether it be gestural or verbal, into the network, doing that real time. And it's fundamentally changing the way we live, the way we do business, the way we learn, the way we love, whatever we do, right? It's changing all of it. And it's, I think we're at a point now where these networks are also at scale. And so the shifts are happening very quickly. And so I think that you're going to see with this sort of human voice interface and what Siri's doing, I think it's a big fundamental change, and we're going to see a lot come out of it.
I agree. Robert, go ahead.
We're also seeing new kinds of apps that use voice.
My photographer friend, why not put more photos into our community? If they're geotagged, it's as easy as pie.
And so, like, this is a new app that's just being launched this afternoon at Jason Calacanis' conference by Trey Radcliffe, and he's using voice to introduce the app, and it's customized. So if you're a woman, it has a little bit different voice than if you're a man. And if you're a photographer, it's a little bit different than if you're just looking for someplace cool to travel to. And that voice is Siri-like. I don't know that it yet has the interaction that Siri has, but you can see the app developers are now using Siri to building in that kind of voice response into the apps, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think that the key change that I sense is the to John Toshak's point, where we see this as somewhat frivolous because people are kind of rebelling against the feeling that they need to be trained rather than the technology being trained to them. Yeah. You know, I've been using the alarms function constantly on Siri. Now, it may seem to be a joke, but I was at John and I were at the Gartner conference in Orlando this week.
I would like.
And there was, you know, sleep was deprived, put it that way. And so I knew that I was sitting there. I had a meeting in about 10 or 15 minutes, and I knew that I was exhausted. So I lay down, but before I did it, I talked into Siri, and I said, you know, wake me up in 15 minutes or whatever it was. And it does that. You don't have to think about it. You just do it. It does it, puts it down, tells you that it's been done, and promptly fell asleep and woke up a few minutes later. Now, I was going to call a friend, Phil Windley, back, and I said, call Phil Windley. Siri didn't, it gave me some choices, because in the rush to put Windley's name into my phone address book, I had just put Windley. So Phil Windley was too much information for it. So it came up with, like, Phil Proctor of the Firesign Theater and a bunch of other people. And I sitting there, oh, I haven't talked to Phil in a while. What was I doing here? You know. And so I made a reminder to myself to either, when I want to call Phil Windley, say, call Windley, or go change the address book so that it responds to what it is that I would normally do. This kind of training that we, self-training that we are going to go through in a very rapid phase, I think, is really, really important.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the thing that's closest in terms of an analogy to this is how I got involved with Twitter, which was because Gabe Rivera said, you really should be on here. And I said, why? And he didn't have an answer. And so it took about a year before I actually figured out that something was interesting about it and then started getting into it. You know, that kind of, you know, motion is, it's accelerated, as we can see with Google Plus, but I still don't know why I'm doing anything on Google Plus, and I expect I won't for a long time. And we'll, in the pre-show, we started talking about Google Reader being absorbed, in quotes, and we should get back to that. Go ahead, Robert.
All right, I just wanted to show you this app that's coming out in a week or so for autistic kids to help communicate, because they can't, some of the worst ones, like my son, can't speak very well. And so you can point at little pictures and you can build sentences.
I would like you to play me.
You know, and you can, you know, click on things. And, of course, my son takes to the iPad really well, so, you know.
Synagogue.
And you can learn how to communicate with somebody without using your voice by just by clicking on pictures here. And it's very, very powerful, and it speaks to you. And this kind of technology is opening up new levels of communication for new kinds for people who are struggling with that. But I'm using it with my two-year-old to teach him how to read and how to speak, which is a lot of fun, too. All right. This is called MetaTalk, by the way. It's coming out. There's a couple of apps that I'll have a video up next week, I believe it is, as soon as Apple approves it. So it's in the Apple approval process, but it's coming soon.
John Borthwick, so I think we agree that this is important, what's happening here. Where do you see it having an impact other than in the early adopter phase that Robert and others are going through?
I mean, I think that in the context, in the broad context of a human voice interface into computing, I think that it goes way beyond the early adopters. I mean, the product that Robert just showed is certainly not for early adopters, right?
No.
And so I think that this has taken us a little bit of time to get to. I mean, I think it's remarkable. I mean, the iPad came out April, so a year and a half ago, right? And in the last year and a half, we haven't seen much stuff like what Robert just showed, where the voice interface is being used.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the impact of Siri is fundamentally about voice. It's fundamentally about the social interface becoming enabled across
coffee shop.
Across a number of mobile devices, which has allowed people to be able to input social gestures much more rapidly. And voice is certainly one of them.
Right, right. I just say
retweets is another.
Voice is a very mainstream channel that we're used to communicating with, right? And so as that opens up on the device and the device is networked enabled and all of this goes through the network and all of it's happening in real time, it fundamentally changes the social interactions that we're going to see on the network and that we're going to see being used by apps and by real live human beings. And so I think that it's we're seeing a whole nother area of activity and innovation which is opening up.
So Kevin Marks at IIW this week, I understand that there were about 30% new people or 40% new people, the biggest IIW yet. It's almost outgrown the Computer History Museum. And there seemed to be a sort of swarming around what Mark Benioff calls the social enterprise and what others are beginning to discuss as the social business. As social business, do you see that?
Yes,
that's the kind of takeaway.
Well, there were several threads going on at once, as usual at IIW. There was a big thread about NISTIC and the government standards for basically adopting logins. There was a strand around OpenID Connect, which is formalizing OAuth as a login standard. To be able to use between different sites, which is ongoing work, and that was starting to show some fruit. But there was definitely a strong enterprise strand and a VRM strand as well with Doc and our usual friends working on that too. But there was definitely a sense that people were starting to think about the ideas of the how you could actually use some of these tools to help both ends of the chain. So the VRM focus on helping the end users control their own data and pass that data through was there, but also thinking about how you can make that work at the customer side as well. There was a demonstration of SCIM, simple cloud interface management. Basically, it SCIM allows you to provision users on multiple sites based on one authentication. So it's a way of straightforwardly connecting different accounts together inside businesses, which is at the moment IT spends big chunks there trying to make this work, and it's something you really need if you're going to have the social enterprise pass through to let end customers provision accounts rapidly for a mass market. So that's something that was up and working between five different companies and working well there. So there was lots of little bits and pieces plugging together, and this stuff started to make sense. And then that's the sort of the enabling infrastructure that means that we can potentially build the social enterprise from end to end. Letting the end users log in to the company's databases and have all that stuff pass through the different systems.
Robert Scoble, what do you think is going to happen next with Google Plus?
Well, they've given us some good signals this week that they're going to integrate the reader functionality, so you can use your old school RSS feeds and read those, and then share them and talk about them in Google Plus. They're removing some of the social stuff that used to be in Reader to simplify the Reader product so that it can be better integrated into the Google Plus system. They're going to turn on brands, they said, soon, but not within days. And they're turning on Google Gmail app accounts within days, they said, so probably in the next week. And that'll bring a new flood of new people into the system. And it'll be interesting to see how they integrated the app accounts into the thing.
Robert, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So do you see this as moves of strength or of desperation?
A little bit of both. They know they're in a deep hole. I was over at the team this morning talking with the guys who build the iPhone app, and they're working their ass off. They know they're chasing Facebook. On the other hand, I sense, talking to Sergey Brin, that they're over the Facebook thing, and they're looking for something new to take social into. And if they take social into the interest graph, I think there's a crack for them. If they try to be the social graph thing, you're not going to get my wife off of Facebook. Give me a break. All of her friends from Tehran are on Facebook, and they're not moving anywhere else. They're not moving to Twitter, and they're not moving to Google+. So if you think you're going to attack that, I think you're deluded. If you think you can build a new system around interests, which Google is better at, Google has a search engine built into Google+, and it's really cool, and Mike Elgin right now is playing around with the search engine, which just got some new features today. So you can track things. You can put a keyword in there and just sit there and track everybody who says the word Obama, for instance. That's pretty interesting, and it's starting to bring us to a place where we can start thinking about finding people who are interested in the same things we are. Facebook is not good at that, and people don't think of Facebook as a place to go to find people who are into mountain biking or skiing or quilting or photography or whatever. Google has a shot here at getting that. And I love the way it displays photos, and I love the way that it displays video. It's more modern in that instance. But if they take it in a new place, then they have a shot. If they try to just copy what Facebook's doing, that doesn't work for me.
Right. So, it's hard to tell.
Well, look at the video Hangouts, right? That was, they talked about how that feature was developed, and it was a sarcastic remark by Sergey saying, hey, you should figure out how to get people to hang out, on video, and he did. And that's actually a really cool feature for enterprise, which is where I think Google+ could do well, too. Google+ and Salesforce are going to compete over the social streams inside enterprises, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I like I get on Google+, and a lot of the stuff you don't see me do in public is doing these video hangouts with friends, and we, I'll see four of my friends online, and circle them, and I'll say, hey, let's do a hangout, and they all pop up, boom, 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 and now we're talking video just like we are with the Gilmore Gang with four or five people. And if they can start thinking about features like that that connect people in new ways, they're going to do just fine.
Right. So a couple of different thoughts. I mean, I think that the it seems like they've got a lot of work to do to bring an audience and to really increase the level of engagement in Google+. And I do wonder whether, I mean, they've been very careful so far to allow sort of feed-based publishing in the system, because they wanted, I think, a critical mass of organic interactions. So the fact they're now flipping on feed-based publishing either says that they're satisfied with the degree of organic interactions, or that they're wholly dissatisfied and they feel like they've got to pump it full of volume and content, right? So,
now, what do you mean by feed-based publishing?
Well, I mean, the Google+ has to date, as you know, in their API and in the interface, has prohibited either users or from publishers from basically wiring up a feed into the into Google+.
Yeah, and by a feed, what do you mean? Are you talking RSS or Twitter? Yeah.
RSS or Twitter, right?
Okay, you mean that's what only they Twitter wrong. If it's taking an RSS feed and then re-exporting it?
Yeah, okay. And that's what they did with Buzz, and I think that very quickly a lot of people went over to Buzz and said, this is kind of interesting, I'm going to wire in my stuff just in case I want to come back, right? And then people said, and then they went back and they said, oh, all my stuff is wired in, why am I here, right?
Yeah.
And it was just a flood of just stuff, right? So,
yeah.
So I think that...
I completely disagree with the notion that that's a mistake. I think that what the mistake is doing it with RSS instead of doing it with the Twitter architecture.
Or
Twitter has annotations and metadata around it that RSS does not have.
I mean, I was at Microsoft.
No, it doesn't.
I was at Microsoft taking pictures with my Instagram, and I want to push the Instagram photo over to Google Plus. That doesn't need Twitter. That needs the OAuth infrastructure and the infrastructure that Kevin was talking about that's being discussed at IIW.
No, yeah, you're mistaking what I'm saying, and so are you, Kevin. RSS. Put it this way: when they've taken Google Reader down, essentially in this latest version, in other words, absorbed it into Google Plus, they're turning off all of the social stuff that they added to Google Reader in the first place.
We don't know quite what they're doing yet. What I'm hoping
that was
doing,
what the report was.
Well, the report was that what I'm hoping they'll do is they'll make the share button in Google Reader share it into Google Plus, and they'll let you direct it to groups if you want to. But there's an explicit share in Reader now.
I know, but that's not the buzz kind of share where it's just everything gets pulled over from everything.
And that's my point. That's why I asked John Borthwick what they're talking about in terms of feeds. If you're talking about feeds that exclude the Twitter taxonomy, which is what I believe is the case, probably because of licensing reasons.
What do you mean by the Twitter taxonomy? Can you explain?
The social graph of Twitter's social graph is, for me, the most important social graph out there. Far more important than anything that Facebook has ever done. And I had hoped that Google Plus would get to the point where it absorbed some degree of user incentive to be able to input the retweet structure, the at mention economy, into Google Plus. It's not clear to me that they're allowing that yet.
Right.
When they do,
they may not, yeah.
Then it will not be the graveyard that Buzz was, or that if depending upon what is actually true about what they're doing with Google Reader, that RSS is.
I mean, one of the things that Reader lets you actually do is share proper HTML marked up stuff, which neither Twitter nor Facebook nor Plus does at the moment. You can only do this sort of anemic text with bolding and one link per post thing going on there.
Well, it's an opportunity for them to
improve this, and I hope they do that right. Because that's the thing that we've lost in the move to Twitter and Facebook, is from the blogging infrastructure and the feed infrastructure, is the ability to share actual HTML. And that's having these weird side effects of the rise of the damn infographic, where everyone is sharing things as images, because that's the stuff, the way you can send stuff through with Fidelity.
Infographics, they're a click farm. That's all that is.
No, but what happens is that I'm seeing this in Facebook feeds and in Twitter feeds as well, from not just from the news community, but from ordinary people are starting to share images of things around, because they can't actually share marked up text around. You can either write a sentence, or you can turn the sentence into a sort of glorified greeting card and share that around as an image. And it's actually a sort of massive step backwards for the web and indexability and usability.
Well, granted, what I'm saying is that the social signals that are coming out of the Twitter social graph are the most profoundly important ones that are out there right now. And they are being orphaned from, supposedly Facebook was going to begin to allow two-way transmission in and out of Twitter. Robert, is there any update on that?
I haven't heard it, and I turned off Twitter on Facebook. That's the last thing I want to see.
Well, I understand. I understand. There's the Scoble effect, and then there's everybody else in the world.
No, when I fed Twitter over to Facebook, I get a lot of unfollows. Facebook, for most people, not on the Gilmore Gang, is about friends and family. And this is why Facebook is in a corner. They painted themselves in a corner, and it's going to be hard for them to get out of that corner.
I'm not talking about the utility of Facebook for the 600 million people. I'm talking about the utility of these social systems in harnessing the social graph. And as such, although it's nice to me, if I get unfollowed by a lot of people, that's a good thing. It cuts down and focuses the environment without having to resort to circles, which I still don't understand as either a metaphor or as a tool.
Circles are like Twitter lists done right.
Circles are like having a wide open channel for not only do you not know what's coming at you, but you have no idea who is sending it to you.
No, you know what's where it's coming because you put somebody on a circle. If you start a circle of Gilmore Gang and you put Kevin on it and you put me on it and you put Toshek on it and you put Danny Sullivan on it, you're only going to see items from us. That's what circle is for.
Okay, whatever. I mean, I don't see any of it because I don't go there.
It's the same thing. I don't know the Twitter list of the four of us. It's the same exact thing.
Go ahead, John.
So I was saying, going back to this question of social signals and how you can use them to, you know, to monitor and to understand what's happening. I mean, Robert used the example of some track-like functionality going on at Google+. We also pushed out something in the last week in that space. And so Bitly has finally exposed an interface where you can where its customers can track and monitor particular terms as they're used. So I'll give you an example. If you go over to bit.ly, bit.ly/, I did a custom URL, /livegang, LiveGang, you could see the incidences of, four of the Republican presidential candidates, Rick Perry, Bachman, and Kane, and Obama. So three Republicans and one existing president / Democrat. And you could also see the related words that people are using to that particular person as they click on links associated with that person. So it's pretty interesting data, and here's an example. It's granted, all these data examples obviously are companies that we're building here at BetaWorks, because that's where I get to see the most data, and that's what I think about most of the time. But it's using the data exhaust and beginning to feed it back into the system, and so that you can both accelerate the real-time effects of that exhaust, but also give people ways to manage and share and curate and understand what is happening right now.
Well, that sounds like the last word. I'm not sure. Okay.
There's a long pause there. So, so take a look at bit.ly/livegang, and you can see see an example there. So there's a lot of stuff which we're working on, and I'm very excited about, and a lot of other people are working on. I mean, I think this is where a lot of the most interesting activity is taking place right now.
John Toshek, what do you think is... the relative balance of the major social stream vendors right now?
Can you rephrase that question?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, here, I think that Google usually engineers products and they engineer for specific purposes. And if you took Facebook and took their kind of tight sealed connection that Robert was talking about, the friends and family, and you took some, and then you looked at Twitter, and you have the wide open connection. They're trying to get right in between the two when they're not seeing those two things are merging. So they're both promiscuous and tightly bound at the same time. And because the circles are promiscuous, where you can be added to any kind of circle you want, and then all of a sudden you're getting all these feeds, but you don't want them because there's not a complete circle there. And at the same time...
Now, Robert says that that's not what happens, but...
he's saying that you can do that if you do create a special circle, and then it's, you know, then you get the Yegi effect. You think you're in a circle, but you're not. You know, you are promiscuous again. You're sending it out to the world, and then you're apologizing later and trying to laugh it off when you know he's getting his ass kicked at back.
No, you're misunderstanding. Circles are for inbound. So I put you and Steve on a circle, and that's all I see is you and Steve. That circle. It's not about outbound, although there is that outbound thing, but the outbound thing is useless. I post everything to public.
It was really useful to me to see Yegi's thing, and I think it was useful for Bezos to see it too. I mean, and it was an outbound circle that was not, that he violated his own circle.
No, he had the wrong account on it. It had nothing to do with circles. He posted it to his public.
That's an endemic problem. You know, I don't know what he did. It's an endemic problem. But you can tell that they're trying to get it somewhere between Facebook and Twitter. You know, Twitter is dispatch, basically. And you see this huge social graph created. Facebook, people spend tons of time on, 20 times more than on Google, according to this, you know, the Gartner symposium that we're at.
And that I believe.
Yeah. So, they're spending, you know, basically it's replaced television, and it's, you know, consuming the web. And Google Circles is not there.
I think what Steve and I are, and everybody on this conversation is coming to, is there's several layers of our interest and attention. The first layer is friends and family. You know, if Steve says he's not paying attention to Tina, he's probably going to get slapped, right? And so that's why Facebook is so addictive, because we have our friends and personal friends and family on Facebook. Then there's Twitter, which is we pay attention to the world that we care about, the news, the industry we're in. I have 33,000 people streaming on my screen. Right now on my screen, there's a tweet every tenth of a second coming down. It's crazy. And then there's interest graphs, which is, hey, I'm in a quilting club, I'm in a bowling club, I'm interested in skiing, or I'm interested in photography. And that is where that's still in play a little bit. It used to be forums, but I think Google Plus has a shot at getting that. I don't go to Twitter or Facebook for my interests, in my photography interests, for instance. I just can't find anything that's that specific. If Google Plus gets that specific, then I think they have a shot at doing something new.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting is that actual social dynamic is inverted. At the very core is friends and family, because you know you want some kind of tight security around that. And at the very tip is the specialized interests, the quilting. And if you take that and switch it over into enterprise, you'll see that there's a pattern that develops there too. It has to have the sharing and security model that you know that is tight, and then you go up into the special groups or lists or things like that where you hope that silos aren't created in the organization because of the replacements for email or things like that. But that's what's going to happen. One matches up with the other.
Yeah, Facebook has a per post privacy system that works really well because everybody's on Facebook. For instance, I can send a message just to my wife and just to Tina that Steve can't see because everybody's on Facebook, and I can search for them really easily, and I can add them at the bottom of the post. Google Plus doesn't have everybody, so it's frustrating. You can do the same thing if they were on Google Plus, but it's frustrating to get them. And the notification system in Google Plus is messed up. There's not a good way to get Tina's attention if she's on Google Plus.
Here's where this goes back to what Siri is bringing into the puzzle. And again, I'm not really focusing on the audio talking aspects of Siri as much as the impact that it has on how we store our data and how we provide access to the different apps on our phone and therefore on the cloud and everywhere, which is that once you've got the ability to be able to communicate who you want what to travel to, you no longer have to specifically send it out. I was at dinner last night, and somebody was Phil Windley was talking about this, about how he sends a post, he'll send it to Twitter, he sends it to Facebook, and he sends it to Google Plus. Those are three separate acts.
Yeah.
If you could combine the circles metaphor on some basis that I don't understand circles, I don't understand how you'd use it. But if you could combine that capability and basically teach the layer of intelligence of the network to understand who you want to see what, with the default mostly to public, wide open, you would have what we are in fact looking for right now.
Yeah, I think Steve, I'm the other way. I don't think humans are good at telling the system where they want the information to go. I think they're good at spraying information into the system. I'm seeing this on Twitter, right? There's guys talking about their socks right now, and there's guys talking about Steve Jobs, and there's guys talking about the Thailand floods, and there's girls talking about movies.
But you've also talked about things like track becoming more useful, etc. Those signals, it's not just about the utility of, oh, I'm going to track something and I want to find out what that means. It's about historically over time you doing that and the sort of fingerprint of what you're interested in tracking so that you don't have to keep managing this on a day-to-day basis because it's futile. You cannot keep up to any of this. So if there becomes this mediation layer in the middle, which I believe is largely going to be constructed around the push notification layer on the iPhone and also on, you know, once you've got that, there are going to be some very powerful signals, some very powerful thought leaders, influencers, whatever you want to call them, who you're going to be essentially subscribing to find out what's going on. That's right. That's the visual. If you, right now, this is very, very coarse grained. It's, you can't really get into it. There's too much stuff there. As you start to filter that stream by removing stuff that's annoying you, that signal is going to become predominant on the network.
And this is what I was talking with Sergey Brin about this morning. It's noise control, and people don't understand what I mean by noise control. But if you remove the noise, all you're left with is the signal you really care about. And I want something like a Gmail filter. But I want, because we're in a semi-public world, we can share these filters. So John can develop a package of filters that are meant for politics. And make that, if he could open source that package, and I could say, oh, he's watching for Obama, and he's watching for Democrat, and he's watching for liberal, and he's watching for the word politic, and he's watching for, Occupy Wall Street. Well, that's a certain kind of filter that's going to grab stuff out of these streams and put it somewhere, right? And I could say, oh, put it in my Spark folder, or put it to this circle, or put it into my Gmail folder.
Right, there will be people that do this. You did it with lists, which I still think is a hopelessly ridiculous format. I mean, it's not a waste of time. For everybody else, it is.
I have 1,300 Gmail filters, and Sergey was like, wow, I don't know anybody with 1,300 Gmail filters. And he runs Google. He's one of the two.
But Robert, we have to process what you do to distill it to the point where we can have some learnings for everybody else on the planet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Robert, would you share some of those filters?
I could, but in Gmail, I can't really share them with you because, first of all, they're sort of private. They're sort of my secret.
They're currently private.
Well. Yeah. They're currently private because it's which PR team is on the outs with me and which one's not. So there's some stuff there that I wouldn't like to share in the public sphere. But even if I didn't care about that, I probably would get over that pretty fast. I can't share it with you because you have a different structure, a different tag structure, a different folder structure for your email, and you have different inputs. Yeah, I'm getting inputs from the PR industry. You're getting inputs from CEOs as an investor, right? And so I might filter out the wrong thing. My filters might filter out things that you don't want filtered out, and you don't have visibility into my filters and why I did that. And so they're not really easily shareable. Now, in the Google Plus or Twitter or Facebook sphere, the public part of Facebook and the public part of Twitter, We could definitely we have a common taxonomy now, and I'm starting to key in on what Steve is talking about taxonomy. There's common people there that I'm following. There's common interests. I've built lists already, and so if I could say go to this list, watch for this word, and put it somewhere, then I could share that with you very easily. I could share that with you, and I would love to see yours.
Right.
This is where I was hoping DataSift was going to go, but DataSift is too geeky to use for normal people, and it costs money. So there's a retardant because most people don't want to pay. Even if it's only $2 a month, they don't want to pay.
Well, I want to sort of go around the table and wrap up because the show's actually been on for quite a while. And John, you have to go?
Surely. I'm good for a couple more minutes.
Okay, good. So I think that we agree that this is that we've somehow moved into a post-Jobs era in the sense that we're not looking to anybody else right now for the kind of breakthrough technology, although I see a story that Robert posted on the chat about how Apple, the Washington Post says that Apple is moving toward an integrated TV. I think, you know, begging that, which I think is quite far off, if they couldn't ship the iPhone 5, I don't think they're going to ship a new TV in very quickly. Go ahead, Robert.
Not a new piece of hardware, because that's the Christmas season's done for that. If you haven't announced hardware, you're not going to ship it at this point. But imagine a week before Christmas that there's a new iPad app that comes out that lets you watch TV in a new way. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened, because a lot of people are going to get iPads at home. And if Apple can put in your head that there's something new to do with your iPad the day you get it, you know, out of your Christmas box, that's really going to be smart. I don't know that they're ready. I don't know that it's finished, but I've been hearing consistently.
That's a good sort of, you know, addition to the comment that I'm trying to make here, which is that I think Michael Markman in the chat room says that there are a few Steve projects in the pipeline. Yeah, I think that it's pretty clear he was most caught up in the last months of his life in trying to figure out how to, you know, basically make the world better for his children and, you know, the kinds of things that he's cared about all along. And I see that the way that they're releasing Siri as an example of this kind of post-Jobs era where the things that are in place now already, I mean, Siri today is a, you know, it's a fun project, but it, you know, remember, it's connected to the network. This is the first example of the of iOS that can be refreshed on the fly. It doesn't need to go through a laptop or be sunk. So, you know, it can and will improve dramatically quickly as they start to process the data that they're already getting about, you know, if 10,000 people say, you know, what's the meaning of life, they might put an answer into there just to shut people up.
Yeah, they certainly are studying that. And they, for the last year, they've been rewriting the app. They also, it's really interesting that they took some features out that used to work. For instance, movie ticket sales and OpenTable. From what I'm hearing it from inside Apple, they're having a lot of trouble signing deals with some of these companies that they used to have an easier time signing deals with, and that's why some of the features aren't there, that it takes you to just a Google page or a list of movie times, and that doesn't let you actually buy the ticket. It'll be interesting to see how they move that in. I'm hearing, by the way, that the CEO is probably going to leave and start another company, but that hasn't been announced yet, but that's probably going to come shortly.
Of OpenTable?
No, of Siri. The guys who started Siri is, you know, their work is done. Now it's a different kind of project now that the thing is shipped. And now it's a project for the lawyers and the people who are going to hook up web services into Siri and add features to it. And that's, you know, you know, when you find somebody really entrepreneurial, that's not the kind of thing that turns them on and makes them wake up early in the morning and get excited about life. They want to go and start something that's different. Siri is pretty interesting. You know, if they get more stuff hooked into it, they really could do some interesting stuff. There's just too many edges right now. Imagine if they hooked it up to social from Facebook. You know, because right now you can't ask it how many people are checked in at the Biadio headquarters on Facebook. That answer exists. There is an API for that. It's just not hooked up to Siri. And if it could get hooked up, and if more and more things, you know, could get hooked up to Siri, that would be really interesting.
All right. Well, Kevin Marks, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay, I'll give you a picture back. What's your end contribution here?
my own contribution is that I've got a lot to go and look at after IAW and stuff to think about there. There's a big chunk there. Somebody mentioned Hypothesis, which was another network for doing fact-checking on the net. Bill Gross also launched Chime in this week. And I think we're going to start seeing people taking logging in with Facebook for granted and then saying, okay, what else can we do? What else can we plug into it? And that seemed to be some of the message coming out of Web2 Summit as well. People were saying, yeah, we do this, but that's just of course we do that, but what else can we do with this now? And that's starting to look interesting again.
What is Chime?
A Twitter copy.
It's, really? It's a Twitter copy, but it's more focused about interests. Yeah. So it's designed to be more of a Usenet-y thing in some ways, maybe. You've got groups that are tuned around topics.
I heard from Drummond Reed about a project he's working on that was very interesting, essentially creating a new trust network.
The vouching stuff. Yeah.
And I think that those kinds of people who have patience to be able to harness the strong after effects of some of what we've been talking about, particularly ad mentions. And I know John and myself have been working on some stuff for years that suddenly seems to be immediately actionable. John, what can you talk about what you see as, you know, from your interest is going on here? What are you going to be exploring?
Certainly understanding how we can both harness and amplify and feedback in these data streams, these signals, is something that we're doing a lot of work on and I'm fascinated by. And it's I feel like we're groping in the dark a bit. We're still learning what this how to do this, because I think it's fundamentally we've never gotten to work with this kind of data before. And these kind of systems, both as individuals and as companies. So I just think that there's a lot of learning happening. So that's generally what I'm doing. And in the next week, I'm probably going to spend also a lot of time doing some care and feeding of iOS 5. I'm loving a lot of what's in iOS 5. We haven't talked much about it today, but there's so much there. But it also requires quite a bit more care and sort of tending, gardening and, just organization and sort of fine tuning of the notifications and other layers in there, which I'm still in the process of doing. So I'm excited about that, but it's there's work there, which there's more work than I expected.
John Tajak.
I think that just to go back to Siri, I think what ended up being discussed was kind of what I said at the beginning, that it started off because it's gaining a lot of attention, a lot of traction, because it exists on a lot of platforms and it's well enough designed for it to work. Then it goes into there's a little novelty around it, and there's frivolous things that are being reported. But that's good, actually. It's good for the industry because then you get a bunch of, younger people who are going to be, doing stupid things on it. And it's probably going to make it onto the Jersey Shore or something like that, what they're doing with Siri. But that itself leads to a lot more things that are going to happen with voice. Whether the handset becomes a personal assistant, there is precedent for it. Entire companies were built, for example, to dictate data into their systems, and salespeople go on the road. They dictate something instead of typing a note later, which is then kind of a brain dead note. If there's some rigor involved in getting the accurate data in there, they could just do it kind of right away, and that more real time improves the data in the records. There's that part. And at the same time, in the enterprise, getting data out. So there's a ton of data around there. So Robert was saying before, is to get the data out. If there's the connections to enterprise data, no matter what it is, if it's a supply chain, if it's somewhere else in the enterprise, using Siri as sort of a personal assistant helps there. I see, maybe it's my bias, I see it more effective in the enterprise than I do in a consumer value. I mean, it's ridiculous to me as when Dragon Naturally Speaking came out, for your computer to be talking to you, and there's all these random conversations of the computer talking to you. So I think it's much more of a focused enterprise effort than it is as a consumer, and I think it's a great play for Apple to get more and more enterprise focused.
Well, I agree with that last sentence, or the last part of the last sentence. But I think that between what you just said and what John Borthwick said, I think that the reason that Siri is so powerful to me is because it is at the training level. We're training it, and more importantly, it's training us to obey the logic of the way that it's implemented. And at the same time, there's this immediate feedback loop because it's a network-connected application. And, I think, we haven't talked about iCloud today. There was, a couple of days of noise about, getting over to iOS 5 and implementing iCloud. But the reality is that it came and it went as an issue, and now we're faced with an Apple that is connected to in real time to the network, which is a massive change.
Yeah.
We haven't really understood or absorbed that because, Steve Jobs died and, everything has been so dramatically focused on the end of an era. This is really the beginning of that era.
Right. I mean, and that is a change to being more like the way that Android and Google have been thinking
Absolutely.
About this forever. It's so if it can do that, but with the grace of Apple, I think the reason Siri works is that it is playful. And that's something that Google isn't good at. Google is not at getting the tone of playfulness right.
It's a great point.
And they absorbed Slide and then sort of ejected them again without actually picking up any of that sort of worldview, which is kind of sad. It's sort of because it's not that the Googlers themselves aren't playful; they just don't seem to put it into the technology.
Okay, I want to thank Rackspace and particularly Rob Legess, without which the show would not be on video. I want to thank NewTek and their TriCaster. We're going to have a problem with the TriCaster because evidently some of TechCrunch TV is now moving to AOL TV, but a requirement is for HD. So either we're going to stay off of AOL TV or we're going to have to upgrade. So we'll have to start thinking about that. I want to thank our producer and director, Tina Chase Gilmore. And I want to thank John Toshack.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. I want to thank John Borthwick.
Thank you, Steve.
I want to thank Robert Scoble.
We didn't even talk about the Lytro camera, but I ordered one. So we'll talk about that.
What is it? Just remind me.
The Lytro camera lets you refocus the image after you take a picture. It's coming out in March. It's $399 for an 8-gig version. It was announced this week. I was at the launch of that. It's a pretty interesting idea. We'll talk about it in March when it actually ships.
I want to thank Kevin Marks. Thanks, Kevin. Mm-hmm. I want to thank everyone who showed up, and especially those who didn't. We'll see you again next time. I appreciate all of these tools. I just feel like I'm in the candy store, and I have unlimited money. It's weird. See ya.